Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." And we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening media is there, always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening and interesting articles that you can download, share, read at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight is 8:09 in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in Freestyle Friday mode. Generally, we're in open form on Fridays. Occasionally, we have a guest, but this time it's Freestyle Friday mode. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. The lines are always open at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215- 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen. How you doing there?
How you doing?
I'm fine. Things is the weather is building up, you know, to my satisfaction. Like here, I go right to my satisfaction.
Yeah, well, I know you're gonna be in another world tomorrow because I think it's supposed to be 85 or something like that.
Yeah.
Then it's gonna be 89 on Sunday, supposedly.
So, oh, man, so, yeah, so we'll all this rain and whatever.
Yeah, we'll see what's going on.
And up and down. But I'm looking forward to our the open forum and, you know, the listening audience getting involved and seeing what's going on in their locales and around the country and around the world as it relates to the liberation of African people development locally and globally.
You know, I think it'll be an interesting program planned out for Sunday, and it'll kind of link to some of the topics I want to bring up tonight. It'll definitely be linked to it. I'll kind of hold the topic and our guests for Sunday. But, Richard, unless you had something on your mind, I just want to bring something up and put a question out to the listening audience. I want to kind of preface the question by article that was in Radio 1, not Radio 1, I'm sorry, News 1. When was this article? A couple days ago. It was called Public Executions of Black People Are Showing No Signs of Ending. And let me read a couple paragraphs out of this. In less than a week's time, America has witnessed or turned a blind eye to three different public executions of unarmed black people as the troubling trend shows no sign of ending. The most recent instance, came Monday night when a police officer in Texas killed a woman who didn't appear to pose any significant physical threat to him seconds after she screamed out, "I'm pregnant." The officer shot Pamela Turner, her grandmother, 5 times at very close range in an apartment complex parking lot. The Baytown Police Department responded in kind by seemingly to defend Turner for her own death. By seemingly to blame Turner for her own death, alleging she was grabbing the officer's taser, which, even if true, should obviously not have called for lethal force to be used by someone who has, in theory, been trained to de-escalate such situations without using a gun. Earlier that day, the NYPD officer who used illegal and banned chokehold to kill Eric Gardner in a death recorded on video was finally beginning his administrative trial to determine if he should be fired. It took place nearly 5 years after Daniel Pantanello killed Garner. Despite video evidence, a grand jury declined to indict Pantiello, who has enjoyed job security as well as significant salary raise since he killed Garner. The NYPD also recently determined Garner did not die from being choked, although the entire world saw the video of Pantiello choking Garner. Rewind this just 6 days earlier, and a white woman in Georgia who witnessed a driver commit a hit and run decided to chase the culprit, block him in with her own car, and shoot him to death. Kenneth Herring was 62 when he was executed by Hannah Payne, a 21-year-old vigilante who was ultimately charged with murder. According to a lawyer, she was simply trying to be a good Samaritan by following and confronting Herring about something the Clayton County Police Department described as a minor fender bender. I could continue because it mentioned some of the other recent incidents this year, Richard. But the question is, what solutions do we come up? What do we do about this? And understanding, Richard, that the solution is going to come from the grassroots. It's not coming from anybody else. Can you hear me clear?
Yeah, it was just choppy.
Yes, it's not coming from anybody else. Because if you look at the people that claim to be in leadership, whether it's black elected officials or black church leaders, they're telling you two things. They're either telling you to vote and vote Democratic as far as the black leadership, or church leaders are telling you to pray. None of those have, either one of those haven't given any significant answers to black people, especially praying amiss. And I'll kind of describe that a little bit later in the conversation, but it's got to be some solutions to this. And that's one of the things that we'll talk about Sunday with our guests, because this type of behavior from Europeans is not new. It's been going on basically since we've been here, but we're going to have to stop this. It's going to have to be us that stop it, and we got to come up with ways to fight it. I mean, it's got to be. We have to come up with the solution. And the thing is, Richard, is this. Yeah. Before I let you jump in. Now, also, I think it was last week, It was a young lady, I think she was in Atlanta, that was sitting in her car in the parking lot of her complex when she was confronted by police officers. I think, in fact, her name is Maggie Thomas. I'm looking at the article. And told to get out of her car, things of that nature. And you know the deal. They run your tag.
Right.
And found out that she had a warrant because she failed to appear in court for a speeding ticket. Now, you know, come on. That type of warrant the average person has. I've had unpaid parking tickets, and they issue you a warrant. I mean, I've had them. I'm quite sure the majority of our listening audience has had it. So when they describe it in the published report as, oh, she had warrants, she had a warrant for an unpaid speeding ticket. She didn't appear in court. But she was accosted, punched, thrown down in front of her four-year-old daughter who was in the car with her when she was sitting there talking in the car with her daughter, and then tased. Now, that incident could have led to her death. It didn't. But when you see black women being killed and viciously beat by police, I'm not even, because the question is our response. What should our response be? But let me flip it over a little bit, because when these white women and these white groups want to use that feminist tag and black women, some black women join in talking about their feminists. When this stuff is happening to black women, I don't see these groups. Where's NOW and these other, I don't even know half of these white women organizations. Where are they? Why aren't they saying something? I don't hear nothing out of them. Nothing. Where they at? Where are they?
Yeah.
And where's the black women that tout or praise being part of these organizations? Why ain't they demanding they saying anything? I don't hear them saying anything as black women as part of some of these white feminist groups. But I just threw that out there as something for us to take a look at, especially folks that don't really look maybe deeper into stories. But we're going to have to come up with solutions dealing with this. Because that same old party line that the politicians give, they don't give no solutions for this violence against our community or in our community. Because the solutions for both, Richard. And the solutions for both might be the same thing. The solutions to violence on our communities and violence in our communities. And then when you hear these, church leaders, the only solution they're given, and they're not even dealing with these issues. They don't really confront these issues by and large. They just use a general answer to prayer as being the answer to everything. And the Almighty gives us a mind. The higher power gives us a mind to use and to come up with solutions. And then afterwards, you can pray for guidance from the ancestors that guided our people for guidance in anything that you do. It happened in Haiti. The people planned out what they wanted, what they were going to do, our ancestors. And before they acted, they asked for guidance from the ancestors.
Mm.
But just praying amiss, being in these places on Sunday, Saturday, Wednesday, Bible study, all during the week, and just praying to white Jesus, or subconsciously praying to these other people, that's not doing our people any good. In fact, a lot of these youth are leaving these churches because of a lot of that foolishness that's going on. And I'm not talking about prayer being foolishness. I'm talking about the application that is being used in a lot of our places of worship. That's foolishness because there's nothing behind it. Even if you read your scriptures, it says faith without works is dead. So they're doing a lot of dead works in these places because there's no work behind it. You got to get out here in the street and do some type of work. You got to form an organization to fight this. Or join an organization to fight it. Go ahead, Richard. I didn't want to.
No. It's that shooting. I have to be honest to you and the listening audience. When I first seen that, because being posted on YouTube, what's that, Facebook? I couldn't watch the whole thing. I mean, for the reasons, you know, and I'm only being descriptive again of what happened compared to, you know, the question you're raising as far as what do we do about it. But it took me like 3 attempts to watch that. And then I was just looking for the incident with the young black female where the police officer body slammed her. I mean, he actually picked her up midway in the air and slammed her down on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, it's so, you know, emphasizing the emotionalism of, you know, just the descriptive of what had happened doesn't provide a solution, is what you're asking us to, you know, kind of explore, or even, you know, those who are failing. You know, so, I mean, what you're asking is, you know, I think we should, you know, come from that general to specific, because what I'm concerned with is how much of us, on one hand, we know that the police department and the institutions, the bureaucracy that supports police officers and policing as it relates to Black people are just that, right? You'd say in 5 years before you're actually, you know, this person, this police officer even comes up on the choking death, or, you know, this rationalization by the department before even investigation. Because the woman who's supposed to be, you know, has already, suppose, here's a grandmother, if I got that right, had children, who had some interaction with the police officer. And I couldn't even fathom why he needed to pump 5 shells in her. I can't even fathom. I mean, like, she was laying on the ground when he shot. There's, you know, no rationale. So what do we do? And you know, when we bring on people as far as what they're doing in the community, those are things. But this thing, it's with the police and the amount of physical abuse in these different, and I think it's happening, well, it's happening all over. Is it more in the southern states that they actually get footage of? Because these are usually like off the side areas where, but what do we do if we don't have control? We don't respond from a power perspective, and then it gets into what is it that we're saying power is, and what is responding from a power perspective? Well, obviously we don't have no control over the judicial system. Is that would having the right people in those as judges, I mean, curtail this? I don't know. Because I don't think you can even do that if you're not organized. And that's where I'm constantly at, Elliot, that we in our localities have to be better organized and accept that we're in a hostile environment. But even that's too general of discussion. You know, what is being organized? You know what I mean? In our communities, what does that mean, you know, to be able to participate effectively, to put people in leadership that really reflects and protects our interests? I'll hold it for that because I think you have more answers than I do.
Well, I don't really have the answers. That's why I'm throwing it out there. I know what I see. I know that black officers, for example, they need to be able to speak to these issues. You hear a lot of stuff about, oh, it's good police, it's good cops out there. In my business, officers come in there. I cater to black folks, and I got black officers coming there. They're nice guys. But a lot of them don't say nothing about this stuff that's going on. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They don't have any response, at least a public response, when you know, I'm in my place of business about things going on, and the people talk about this type of thing all the time. But because they're in an environment where they see this stuff, they see the culture of these cops, they work with them. They know the culture of these departments. You know, having a job is one thing, but when you see your people being abused, killed, or beaten, and you don't have anything to say about it or rise up in a departmental fashion and say, I'm not going to allow this anymore, then you got to be held, be held responsible too for your actions. When that guy killed, you know, the brother's name escapes me, down in South Carolina, when he was wanted for some type of menial warrant and jumped out of his car and ran, and the white officer shot him in the back. Mm-hmm. It was a black officer with him. Mm-hmm. There on the scene, when the young black boy was shot in his backyard out there in San Francisco, or in his grandmother's backyard, two officers shooting over a fence or whatever. It was a black and a white officer that did it, or that was there or involved. In some of these instances, Richard, it's black officers present, or black officers at the department when these guys get back and find out what they did. I mean, what's their response? They're there. They're on the front line, so to speak. And we can't allow any more, or we got to start developing ways that you can't allow these people to come in your community and just, this reminds me of when our ancestors was either in chattel enslavement or basically right out of chattel enslavement, where these people would just come into your towns, kick your door open, pull somebody out. They're basically doing the same thing now, Richard.
Oh, yeah.
If I went into that neighborhood, for example, me, and grabbed that young lady out of her car, I don't know her. That white cop that did that didn't know her. If I grabbed that young lady out of her car and body slammed her and started beating her, somebody in that neighborhood would have responded to me. Mm. And I'm talking about responded in a physical fashion. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Somebody would have responded to me beating that young lady, and rightfully so. But, okay, what's the difference in responding to those people? Especially if you know that this person isn't doing anything. Hey, come on here. She didn't appear for a speeding ticket warrant. Oh, wow, that's a capital offense to warrant you being tased and beaten and possibly killed Sandra Bland, in front of your four-year-old daughter. How traumatizing is that to a four-year-old?
It puts me in that that frame of mind, or remembering when we interviewed Jason Black on his film Race War, you know, and you remember the two police officers that he interviewed, the female and the male, the black officers complicity. That's all we can say, right? And in relationship to making themselves be part of the culture that they are aware, and the silence that they provide, which again means that they're outside the community itself, has to be, you know, because some of those police officers come from the community that they become a part of that department of.
Oh, certainly.
And they become a part of that culture, you know? And they know where, like as he in that film showed, a lot of those, at least happened there, those guys came from other states to become a part of that police police department, primarily southern states. And the view that they brought to policing black people. So when you say, the kind of view that not only just right out of slavery, but the whole thing of the Jim Crow period and whatever, yes, this is a perpetuation of that moment. From a social, political, and economic standpoint, we are back at that moment when we're talking about when they characterize white populism
We might have never left it, Richard. The time might have. We are in more modern times, but we might have left. We might not have never left those moments.
That's it's not frightening, but it gets, you know, to the point that you're making. What is our power, institutional or populist response? I mean, because, and I'm trying not to dwell on, we have to deal with the criticism, not just of those who are sitting in the departments, but the culture we're creating, right? I mean, that we're a part of, that we perpetuate, reinforce by, because how many people in those same videos, you know, what you'll see is people are videoing it and ain't saying nothing. Yeah. Remember Cynthia McKinney saying the people who were standing on the sideline?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that no different than standing on the sideline? Because, you know, we don't know the follow-up in their area, so I can only look at the area I'm in, and I know that people are mobilizing, and I'm making a distinction between mobilizing and organizing, right? But people are mobilizing, but are we really organizing compared to standing on the sidelines and complaining in a moment where the intensity from the outside, because I can't tell, Elliot, is this because of social media penetration that we are seeing it? But we already knew that this was going on, but we're seeing the frequency and the intensity. And at the same time, they're showing us about lynching. You know, I mean, Beats comes out with Reconstruction, right? Being museum down south, the brother stuff. We're seeing this while we're watching this type of action, as you say, that never stop, but it seems more for maybe it's just at this moment in my life, I'm seeing such a frequency and this mindset. But at the same time, we're not as organized against it. We're not as vocal against it as we were, say, in the 60s. I mean, the example of organizing against it, isn't the Panthers an example of taking a organizing presence in the community in relationship to the type of police brutality that was going on?
Well, listen, Richard, all I'm saying is this, because you mentioned about us organizing to deal with this, and that's what it's going to take. But as of right now, mm-hmm. as of presently, you have, and I'll use the term organized, you have organized armed resistance in our community as we speak.
Mm.
It's already there. And I'm not advocating anything. Keep in mind, I'm not advocating anything. But the armed resistance is already there. We see it every night. And this racist media plays it up every night. When you turn on your television and hear about all this gunfire and murders in some of these communities, the armed resistance is already there. But they seem to turn into punks when this man comes into your neighborhoods and shoot unarmed people, kick in doors, beat women, shoot women, kill people, kill women, kill children. They seem to turn into punks then, like they maybe want to wet their pants. But any other time, they firing down the street, hitting innocent people, hitting old women, old men. Come on here.
A baby got shot.
See, this is what I'm saying. You already got some type of armed resistance already in these communities. If you want to be a soldier, there's an opportunity. Because just like I said, if I went into any of them neighborhoods and tried to beat a woman like that officer beat that young lady and tased her and all that stuff in front of her, body slammed her, I'd be dealt with in the community, and rightfully so. Then why wasn't this person dealt with? From what I seen in that video that somebody was taking, it was only one cop standing there doing it.
Mm-hmm.
One cop. One. and it was dark. Come on, man. You know, let's go grab a call. Let's go to North Carolina and Scotty.
Richard, greetings, Elliot and Richard. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Man, y'all touched upon so much, and I got an opinion on the three topics that y'all talked about. Y'all just talking about black cops. Elliot, I think it's incorrect to call it armed resistance. It's just people running around with guns.
Well, but I mean, it can be be an arm.
I know what you're saying.
Okay.
They're not resisting anything.
I agree.
They're just armed. And I agree with your comments. They turn into punks when it comes to dealing with people harming the community. I mean, I couldn't say it any better than you. You was clear on that. And I agree with you. But here's something on black cops. I had to go with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. on this. Don't matter about your skin color. What matters most is whether you believe in justice, practicing justice, or whether you practice non-justice. And that doesn't matter what color you are, what shade you are, what religion you practice. None of that matters if you don't practice justice. It don't matter. And I've heard people say, we need to be policing our own communities. Well, if they're talking about policing our own communities Black Panther style, then I ain't got a problem with that. But if they're talking about black people becoming more cops, that has shown to not have solved anything.
Mm-hmm.
Black cops have been a part of some of the most infamous assassinations of activists in our community. I'm thinking about Fred Hampton. You had a couple of black cops riding in on that. You know, there's a black professor, I can't recall the college or his name, but a few months ago, I actually got into it with somebody about me making a comment that when it comes to cops, all I see is their uniform. I'm not looking at their skin color. And so, you know, this person kind of got upset. But the study that we was commenting on, the professor said that black and Hispanic cops are just as likely to shoot, beat, tase, and abuse people in the community just like these white cops. And that he said it's in the media as part of this, the media really, really, really focuses in when it's a white cop and it's a black victim, but they don't really focus on when it's other non-white cops who are doing just as much as damage in our community. And Baltimore really sticks out in my mind. You talk about Freddie Gray, then you had that one cop caught on video just putting a vicious beat down on that brother. And so, you know, it's to me, you are right, it is a culture, but this is how I look at it. Like, for example, now, I've never been a police officer. I know some people that have, but I have been in the military. And you hear about a lot of rapes and stuff going on in the military against women, and even men are being raped. Well, how come you don't see as many prosecutions and what have you in the military? A lot of people don't want to speak up. Why don't they want to speak up? Because they don't want to buck the system and hamper their ability to get promotions, which means more pay. And I imagine it's the same in the police department. I don't want to make any waves. I don't want to buck the system. I just want to do my job. And we know what their job is. Their job is slave catchers in this modern era of prison slavery. So that's what I got to say about black cops. In terms of black churches, the black church has been the backbone always of the struggle here in the United States. And we're talking about pre-1865 slavery, black churches running the Underground Railroad. I know the Quakers get a lot of the credit for the Underground Railroad, but it was a lot of black churches. A lot of black churches, y'all know that church, Emmanuel, that Dylann Roof went in and
mm-hmm.
shot up, got burnt down
yeah.
because they were organizing a rebellion and what have you. Even when we go to the 60s, whether you agree with Dr. King's tactic of nonviolence or not, still the black church was out there organizing, marching, standing up, demanding rights and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we look at the more militant movements during that period, Robert F. Williams was a Christian. A black church here in Monroe, North Carolina, held raffles to buy rifles to arm the Black Guard to, you know, arm their protection, community protection unit. What has happened? That's what we got to ask ourselves. What has happened? I think what has happened is the church stopped being about justice and started being about prosperity. Prosperity preaching and, you know, give your money to God and God is going to bless you sevenfold or tenfold and you can have heaven right here on earth and you know, you can have all these cars and these big mansions and all that. I mean, look at Creflo Dollar. When you ever heard of Creflo Dollar speaking, giving a sermon on justice? And the Bible is filled with sermons on justice. Mm-hmm. The only Black preacher that I know of right now that's really, really putting in work, and granted, I don't know them all, but one that's getting publicity is Reverend Barber out of North Carolina, here in North Carolina. This man has really been putting in a lot of work. A lot of work in the state and nationally. Whether or not it's effective, that's up for a debate. But he is like you said, faith without works is dead. You can't pray and then wait on God to do something for you when he's giving you two hands and two feet and a mouth to do it yourself.
You're absolutely right.
Faith is supposed to undergird courage. You know what I'm saying? That's what prayer is about. You know, I remember the scene from Glory with the brothers standing around with the Bible and praying before they went into battle, okay? So I think that's what happened to the Black church is they got into materialism, okay? And they're all about prosperity preaching and not so much about practicing justice. Last thing that I wanted to comment on, when you're talking about these women's movement, I have been speaking out against the Me Too movement, and I'm one of the few voices that I see publicly on social media who's ever said anything about it. When they come out with these hashtags, just believe her. And then it's especially, you know, as a Black man who knows Black history, that's the reason a lot of Black men got lynched, is because they just believed the white woman. You know what I'm saying? And that promotes what that promotes, that's anti-justice right there. That's saying, oh, don't worry about a trial. Don't worry about taking them to court. Don't even worry about filing charges. Just believe her. You know what I'm saying? Just believe her. And so then whenever a person is on a rape charge or sexual assault charge, and that jury has been indoctrinated with just believe her, when we know historically and in modern times, a lot of white women have lied about, especially Black males attacking them. Okay, so I'm with you on that. Now, I was glad that this happened. It's the Me Too. It's not the Me Too movement, but they're part of the Me Too movement. I forget the name of their organization, but they had a Black woman who was president, who was forced to resign because her Black son, who's a yoga instructor, was given a one-on-one session with a white woman. And this white woman never, when it allegedly, she alleged that he rubbed himself up against her and she felt violated. He didn't rape her or anything. She said he rubbed his genitalia, you know, through his clothes and through her clothes up against her. Never filed charges, nothing. Still haven't filed charges to this day. Never made out a police report. She made a Facebook report about it. And so the mother, the Black mother who was the president of, man, what is the name of that organization? It's mostly funded by these white celebrity women. I can't think of it right now. But anyway, they forced her out because she wasn't just going to believe the white woman. She believed her son, and her son said the white woman's lying. And do you know they forced her to resign because she wanted to stand by her son and help him, you know, pay for his attorney and his defense and what have you. So that whole Me Too movement is counter to justice. are women being abused, mistreated, and raped, and sexually? Yes, that's a big problem. That is a problem. Sexually harassed on the jobs. I witness it on the job and what have you. And so while we don't want to dismiss any claims of abuse or anything, but you got to follow the proper procedures. You got to go file a police report. You got to get on the prosecutor to prosecute whoever you said victimized. And then it's got to play out in court. We need to see the evidence. How many people do we see getting exonerated from and let out of prison after 20, 30 years on a false conviction and free because of DNA evidence? So the Me Too movement is garbage. It runs counter to justice. But thank y'all for letting me go on my little rant. Interesting topic. Y'all covering a lot of stuff.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Thank
you. He raised some good points. You know, but Richard, and I'm glad Scotty kind of put a perspective on that, because I was going to mention that anyway. But I'm glad that he kind of beat me to it. I wasn't talking about the traditional church that our people experienced during our enslavement and shortly after, because a lot of those men that were involved in those movements then were for the people, and they were for justice. Listen, you don't hear churches talk about Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey. Both of those men were pastors of churches. Well, Nat Turner didn't really have a church. He had a kind of like a ministry where he was going back and forth to plantations. But Denmark Vesey had a church. And listen, if you're talking about the people, then both of them had a church. They were both pastors of churches. And they both had visions from the Almighty. And unless black people figure that they were insane, they both had visions that they had to do something about the abuse of their people. And they put their lives on the line to do it. And we see what happened. That don't take away from the sacrifices those men made. But, I mean, how come they're not enshrined? Like you see these, some of the black churches done got ashamed, so they don't put these white Jesuses all up in there. Some of them don't care, and they still do. But you don't see those people enshrined. In every black church in this country, you should have a picture of those men. They might not know what they look like, but have a reasonable facsimile of them in the church to recognize their sacrifices for our people. They didn't do it for themselves. But you don't hear them. Listen, have you ever been to a church, Richard, where you heard those men's names mentioned?
No, not the few times I've been in a church.
I mean, even when they're recognizing black history in the church, I don't hear those men's names mentioned.
Right.
And I guess, you know, you're talking about church folks, maybe because they took up arms and, you know, took some white folks out. Well, okay, they read a Bible. They see plenty of those men that they reverence in there, took people out. Took them out. And they were told, according to the writings, told by God to take them out. So, you know, I'm just saying that, you know.
When you say that, I'm looking at, and I feel I'm getting ready to go on a slippery slope, right? Because can we, it is somewhat of an indictment of America and of Black America in general, and specifically, because as Scotty was raising about the church and the police, continuing to answer your question, what should we do? It seems to play as he raised the point about the media's participation in this, right? Because though, what comes to my mind is the issue around how Minister Farrakhan was placed on a list, and because he's placed on a list, you know, the Nation of Islam is placed on a list, which is speaking, kind of doing that kind of prophetic talk, religious prophetic talk, right? And then Facebook says is just in making, from a black perspective, it becomes a symbolized as anti-Semitic, right? But it's the communication mechanism, which now the new communication mechanism, because anybody who's watching, as in both of you have said, watching the traditional communication outlets, we need to look at them as passive information disseminators or active contributors to condition.
That your mic is getting low. I guess we'll work on that. You say that again, Richard, because I didn't hear any of that. That didn't go across.
I'm saying that the media is the one that's actually shaping the mindset that is happening, right? And because shaping, but it's shaping to eliminate those voices, even in the church. The media, on one hand, has raised, and I'm saying raised, generation that believes more than what Scotty says, that justice, which has been justice and freedom, has been the continuity of Black America's position. Instead of raising that, the media has reinforced the goal is about getting money or getting wealth. Well, the leadership of the churches, are they immune to the condition that getting wealth, you know, is more important than utilizing the institution to, and what is called what is that ministry that where you get is all about money, you know. To utilize the ministry to get money compared to utilize it to speak for social justice or the perpetuation of freedom. When you say Nat Turner and Denmark Vesey and those men, they were using the gospel to perpetuate for social justice. They were perpetuating freedom. And they didn't, even though the media was perpetuating white supremacy, but it was perpetuating white supremacy by perpetuating to be white is to be an American. But to be black is not to be an American. And to be black, you are able to, whiteness is allowed, especially the institutions of whiteness, especially the policing institution of whiteness, are allowed to use whatever force that the individual seems to want to be able to use at the time. And it will be justifiable. It'll be justifiable by them executing it, and they will be reinforced, which said is the grand jury just gave this guy who was getting paid. So the bureaucracy was justifying his abuse of force. He was getting a promotion, being able to work, and using the court system, reinforcing the action on a black person was acceptable. Well, as you said earlier, isn't that the same thing when they were dealing with lynching? Wasn't lynching communally just? The lynching by law justifiable? Wasn't lynching by using the sheriff's office and even deputies justifiable? So that's why when you raised the point about it being no different, sure. Again, what is our reaction? When most of us, because those guys, and I agree with you and Smitty on that too, that yeah, they can be the armed vanguard for protecting our community from psychopathic behaviors within our community, and psychopathic behaviors from outside our communities, even those who are using the shield as a means of protection. They can be. But then we have to be able to, you know, that's why I keep using the term organize, and I hope the listening audience maybe, you know, have other expressions, can use that because, you know, in Philly, Elliot, they got a question on the ballot about utilizing non-armed individuals to regulate, they say, traffic within our community. Well, if Smitty is right. If Scotty's right, what stops them from being more hostile than the police within our community?
Yeah, in fact, if you remember the detailed description of the ones that at least Philadelphia is proposing, it mentioned traffic, but it says that their other duties would be defined later. So you know what that means.
Right. They'll put them around universities within supposedly hostile, poor community, black communities, you know, for those who don't know. And when we talk about Baltimore, what's that university that's in within Baltimore City? John Hopkins?
Okay. Yeah. Hopkins. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll put them around there, you know, what will their job be? To observe what is going on in the community in order to be able to inform, one, who are the actors to protect those islands of whiteness, while at the same time, the political leadership, the leadership in general, is not doing anything to deal with the condition that black people have to live in that creates these individuals that do what they're doing.
Before we take a brief break, Richard, I want to read this other article here. And this is from a couple weeks ago, and I never got the chance to read it, but it's kind of apropos for what we're talking about tonight in regards to rogue behavior in our neighborhoods by these cops. This came out of South Carolina. South Carolina sheriff indicted for destroying phone and creating a fake charges and arresting a man who recorded cops. A federal grand jury has indicted a South Carolina sheriff and his two deputies, and I got a picture of them up here, after federal investigators determined that the law enforcement officers arrested a man, created a fake police report, destroyed the arrestee's cell phone and held the victim in jail on false charges and blamed it all on another cop, all because they were upset that the man filmed them on his cell phone camera. Reports that Alex Big A Underwood, the first black sheriff elected in Chester County, South Carolina, was indicted on charges ranging from conspiracy to falsify evidence, along with Chief Deputy Robert Sprouse and Lieutenant Johnny Neal Jr. Underwood, who has served in the position since 2013. Underwood was suspended from the office less than an hour after the indictment was announced, according to the Rock Hill Herald. According to court documents on November 20th, 2018, Underwood, Neal, and Sprouse responded to a report of a man fleeing the scene of an automobile accident in Fort Lawn, South Carolina. When they arrived, a man who lived near the scene came out of his home and began filming the commotion on his cell phone and broadcasted it on Facebook Live. The indictment states that the man did not enter the roadway or interfere with law enforcement activities. Underwood repeatedly told the man, identified as KS, to go back on his porch. When KS retreated to his porch, Underwood reportedly lunged at KS and demanded his cell phone. Deputy Neal eventually helped Underwood restrain KS and after handcuffing him, knocked him to the ground, injuring him. While KS was being taken to the detention center, the officers realized that the video had been published on Facebook Live. And when they arrested KS, he didn't have his phone. What could these brave law enforcement officers do? Prosecutors say that Underwood told deputies to draw up a search warrant, saying that one of the cops lost his radio during the incident and that it might be inside the house of KS. But before the warrant was signed, the three officers entered the home to search for the cell phone. Sprouse eventually found the device by asking another deputy to call it and located the ringing phone. Meanwhile, they called the detention center and instructed the staff to place a hold on KS, detaining the citizen for 3 days. After finding the phone, Sprouse delivered it to the deputy in charge of collecting evidence. In January, the officers reportedly created a police report with fake details about the man's arrest. The report said that KS left his yard, impeded officers, and used profane language towards them during the incident. KS detailed the lies in the report, backed up his video evidence, and the fact that his home was searched and his phone was seized without a warrant. But the three men shifted the blame to the evidence officer, saying that he had taken the phone instead. The officer signed a disciplinary report against the officer for destroying or concealing evidence, causing the report to be sent to the FBI. When the FBI came to investigate, Sprouse told the federal investigators that he had no idea who took the phone from the man's house, while Underwood allegedly told the feds that he didn't even see a video until a week later. But the FBI knew that he had seen the video on Facebook Live the day it had streamed. Underwood has been charged with depriving the rights of a citizen, tampering and falsifying records in the federal investigation, and making false statements. Neal has been charged with the deprivation of rights of a citizen and falsifying records. And Sprouse have been charged with tampering, falsifying records, making false statements. All three men have been charged with criminal conspiracy. Now, this is a black sheriff, and two of his deputies are white, Richard.
Hey, Elliot, may I jump in there?
Yeah.
I actually wrote about this guy months before he got arrested on what you just read. I have nieces. My brother's ex-wife lives in Chester, South Carolina, in that county. And I have several nieces. They high school age, but one of them, she's 12. And she, you know, is getting in trouble at school and stuff like that. I told my brother he need to send for her to come stay with him and his new wife, you know, because the mother be calling us to try to talk to her. And, you know, she not really listening to us. She's not a bad child. I don't believe there's any bad child, but I believe something going on with her. And so I saw a report from the local out of a Charlotte affiliate, WSOC, did a special report on that sheriff because he runs a boot camp for children. And they had videotaped some of it. And, you know, you ever seen that Scare Straight where they be yelling at the kids and mm-hmm. stuff like that? Well, that's what these officers, it's run by deputies, run this little boot camp. And I mean, man, they was pushing them kids around and they had a psychologist view, you know, the video and stuff. And the psychologist said, this is child abuse. This is child abuse. So when I read about him being arrested, you know, and I had wrote about that. And then in my article, I was like, you know, I was so mad. I might have even commented it on a podcast. I was so angry. I said that, you know, somebody need to go down there and record all of them deputies that's down there abusing them children and post they wanted posters on social media or something. Take a picture of their driver's license license plate. Let them know that we watching you and what you're doing to these children. So when he got arrested for doing that to that citizen, I was not surprised. Because if you hear him in that special report, he was like bragging about, you know, abusing these children and stuff. And so I'm not surprised. If he abused a child, then, you know, it's not surprising that he would abuse this citizen. Thank you.
Well, yeah. Richard, this
it speaks to being that the process being an organized process.
Exactly.
To you know, not just an individual, but now they done organized it, you know.
And this is not, listen, this guy is going to be thrown, they're going to throw the bus at him, not thrown under the bus. They're going to throw the bus at him because, number one, he did this, he got caught, and he's black. But this type of cover-up has been going on in all these departments. Especially where all these, look at the tape of Sandra Bland comes out long after she's been murdered. This type of stuff was known. It was released on this trial for this cop that Texas was sent after Eric Garner was murdered by the cops by some of the higher ups talking about, well, don't worry about it. You know, like kind of blowing it off. And this trial is not even for, this trial is for this guy's job. Now, he's been on the job ever since Eric Garner has been murdered. But he's been on basically been on vacation and getting paid. And from the published report, he didn't got raises since he's been on this desk duty. But this thing is for his job. It's not even for him murdering that man for selling loose cigarettes.
And it's also, in my opinion, it's just an opinion, you know, because I'm saying that the media is a instrument for social control. It's also just to reinforce to all black people, this is what you are going to get. And this is the repercussions that you think we should get that we won't when this thing happens to you. So you should know how to act. You know, you should know how to act, which puts everybody in the position of just being observers when those who don't act in that fashion, who speaks up for themselves.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You can get involved in this open forum by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kamban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
You know how we think. Organize the hood under our chain banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And I'm hitting cameras in the street like watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live. Able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common needs. And all my comrades is ready. We just spreading the seed.
Black man. Live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate?
No more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects, material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rather get shot in they back than fire back. We tired of that, corporations hiring blacks. Denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my raps. It's documented, I meant it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathe in it. It's more than just fucking believing it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's C-Lo for push-ups now. Many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
Your average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a police state.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:20 in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in open forum this evening. And give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Hold on 1 second here. And give us a call again. I'm sorry, I got a little distracted. Give us a call. We're in open forum, Friday open forum. And the lines are open, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got a call waiting. Before we go to the call, Richard.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Before I go and take our next call, let me briefly read this article here. Just read this paragraph and throw this into the mix for conversation for my listening audience. And it kind of dovetails on what I was talking about in reference to our response to incursions in our community by outside forces and dealing with inside forces wreaking havoc in the community. Check this out, Richard. I don't know whether you saw it in the published report. This was on the Griot. Hate groups plan to protest at Spelman, Morehouse, and Clark graduations. Westboro Baptist Church, located in Topeka, Kansas, has well-documented history of organizing hate protests and is a registered, classified hate group and is I'm reading from this published report, monitored by the FBI. Their websites contain vile and racist and homophobic slurs. The press release from Westboro about the Spelman protest says that the group takes umbrage to the college having LGBTQ organizations on campus. More evidence does not seem necessary to demonstrate that this college is being paid to produce perverts who aggressively strive to push others toward sin and down the path to hell. As these women graduate, they must sanctify themselves physically from this college and its satanic lies and rend their hearts in mourning for their past sins. The Westboro also issued a report on Clark, saying that Reverend Dr. Ken Walden, who is the dean, is a false prophet and a whorish, lying pastor. As far as Morehouse, the hate group is displeased about Morehouse's new policy allowing transgender students. Now, Richard, I don't agree with those lifestyles at all. They're not anything dealing with our culture. But this is my whole point. You got a hate group, a racist hate group, that's coming from Kansas, coming to Atlanta to protest a graduation of these black schools, and you got fraternities and Morehouse is a Spelman is a girls' school, young girls,
and Morehouse is a male school.
Yeah, but I'm gonna repeat this: you got a white supremacist group or a white supremacist church that's coming from Kansas to come to Atlanta to protest three black schools graduating. And you got all these fraternities and sororities and Morehouse men and all this other crap. I didn't go to college, so I don't know about all this Greek letter stuff. But those Greek letter black folks, if they got any balls, they need to be there and send those white supremacist asses back to wherever they came from with some feet and everything else up their butt. You mean to tell me you're going to come there and protest? I don't care what you don't agree with. You're going to come there and you got the nerve to protest at the black school and they have graduates? I'm telling you, Richard, if our people allow that, if our people in that area allow those people to be there talking about they're protesting a black graduation, but I know they'll probably be protected by the cops. But still, come on. Richard, good morning.
I mean, they're protected by the cops, but that doesn't stop anybody in, as you talked about earlier, making a citizen's aggressive position by going before they get there. You ain't got to wait till they come.
I know. You going to come from Kansas and protest my daughter or my son graduating? I don't care. Listen, everybody at Morehouse and everybody at Spelman ain't gay and homosexual. Mm-hmm. So if you got a problem with gay and homosexual, then go to some of them colleges where a lot of that stuff stemmed from. Don't come to no black schools that's recipients of that crap and those lifestyles. Go to some of them other schools where some of them people that's a part of those supremacist groups are from. Protest there. Why weren't they at Penn State when that big scandal came where the football coach and all of them was up there molesting boys that had been going on for years and had been protected by not only the head coach paternal, but that school period? Protest some of them Catholic schools, Catholic universities, that's been protecting all this molestation of boys for centuries. Go there and protest that. Say they gonna roast in hell. You got the nerve to come to a black school? They ought to give them something to come there for.
Well, that's so much.
Let's go to 646. 646.
Yeah, what's going on, Richard? Did I leave? What's happening, brothers?
How are you, sir?
Hey, listen, man, I totally disagree with you. I would like to thank those white folks for coming and doing the job that we should be doing. There's no reason whatsoever we should allow the homosexual freak nation gender to move forward on the level that it is on our black college campuses. Next, they'll be overruling those campuses. Dr. Baroudi talked about it when he was at Morehouse, and now look at Morehouse with the freak agenda. No, man. Sometimes we have to take a stand and stand up for African manhood and womanhood and not allow these degenerates to come in and overrule us and take advantage of our children. No, brother. You wrong this time.
Now, wait a minute. I don't think you followed or listened to what I said. When I said about, did you hear what I said in reference to what's going on there at the school?
Yeah, I follow.
Okay, all right. I didn't say anything about condoning. Go ahead.
You said that the fraternities and the sororities should come and handle their business. Wow, man, sororities and fraternities are jokes, man.
Well, wait a minute. Handle their business in regards to what?
Handle their business as far as going after the, what you call them, right? Going after those white protesters.
Yeah. Right? For the audacity for them to come to a black school talking about what they are or aren't doing. That's all I'm dealing with.
But see, they facilitate that nonsense, man. They go along with that BS. That's the problem. Fraternities and sororities, number one, those Greek organizations are jokes. How do you rep somebody else's culture above your own? That right there shows the lack of understanding of history and one's culture. So that's why I never respect none of them. They're not a Greek. They're not a Sora. They're not one of them I have any respect for. Because you're never going to put somebody else's culture in front of mine when I was the one who took them off of their all fours. So nah, bro, I don't respect them. And this is why you have a culture to wear as, like a brother said earlier today on Oshie's show, we worship a sky daddy that ain't did a damn thing but brainwash us. We worship anything and everything that's anti-African.
Yeah, but
we want to be something that we never going to be. You ain't never going to be a white man.
Now, Jay, now let me ask you something. Because everybody at Morehouse and everybody at Spelman is not gay or homosexual or transgender.
I agree.
Now, you being a man, and before those folks were Greek letter fraternities or sororities, they were black men and women.
Okay.
No matter how they might feel in reference to that. Now, just say, for example, as a man, and your daughter is at Spelman, or your son might be at Morehouse, graduating with a degree in architecture, business, whatever, and you, your wife, and some of your family members, maybe your mom or dad, if they're still with us, is going down to see Jay Jr. graduate. Jay Jr. is not a homosexual. He's a young man at Morehouse. And you're confronted with some white folks talking crap. What would you want to do?
Well, I could tell you what my kids would do.
No. I ain't talking about your kids would do.
What would you want to do?
Because I don't know what you would do. Huh?
I would agree with the protesters.
Okay, now, wait a minute. See, I don't think you heard what I said. I don't think you heard what I said, Jay. Because I said your son, Jay Jr., I would assume Jay Jr. is not gay or homosexual. Jay Jr. might be going to Morehouse and graduating with his degree in business. So you, your wife, and your parents, if they're still with us, are all going down to see Jay Jr. graduate, a young man at Morehouse, and you're confronted by some white supremacist talking crap. What would you want to do? And you said that you would agree with them?
I would agree with them.
Okay, well, I'm done. I'm done with that.
Let me finish my point. I'll tell you. I wouldn't respond to it. I wouldn't get caught up in it. I would just handle my business. See, things like that.
Well, wait a minute. What is your business?
That don't affect me if I agree with it.
Well, when you say handle your business, what are you talking about?
Go through the program. Watch him receive their degree and go on about their business. And go on about my business.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't get caught up. I wouldn't feel one way or another because I agree with what their protest is. See, because the bottom line in all of this is all that that's doing is destroying the culture. See, you allow this stuff to fester within the community. And then at some point in time, it dominates the community. Just look at the way lesbianism, homosexuality, transgender is becoming a dominant force. That in this country,
yeah, but see, you done pushed the whole thing. You done pushed it to another conversation because I done already. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I done already. No, you're not putting it in context because I already said before I even started talking about this. That I wasn't talking about that because I don't agree with those lifestyles and behaviors at all. So when I said about putting it in context about these whites coming to a black school talking about what the people should be doing, I'd give them something to come there for. That's all I'm talking about. I ain't talking about no alternative lifestyle. I don't care nothing about that foolishness.
No, no, no. What I'm saying is I think that straight black pride, those that agree in being straight, that are African, should be joining forces with them and having their own protest.
Okay, well, great. Then you join forces with some white supremacists then. Maybe Richard. Richard, you want to join him?
Okay, well, Ellie, can I ask you this one question?
Hey, Richard, you want to join him?
No, let me ask you this question, Ellie.
Go ahead.
Because this puts it into context.
Go ahead.
Why is it that every time you turn around, Negroes are talking about coalition and joining forces with other people to solve the problems of today. But so now we got to be selective. We got to be selective on what crackers we join forces with to address the issue.
I never talked about joining forces with no Europeans to deal with our issues. You've never heard me advocate that.
No, I'm not saying you do, Elliot.
Oh.
I'm not saying you or Richard do. What I'm saying to you is that the masses of black people, they believe in joining coalition with the oppressor, with the enemy, with the so-called ally, that all they do in the end is take control and put a foot in their ass. That's what I'm talking about. See, we don't want to, who agree with a certain position, want to go against the Negro who believes in a different position. Ain't nobody gonna stand up as a black man and protest against homosexuality and what's going on because they don't want to make it seem as though, oh, we separated, oh, we this, oh, we that. See, and that's why we always get in a position to whereas those that want to dominate the culture never gets to dominate the culture because the Twisted Sisters and the rest of them come in and confront those that want to lead, and those that are in agreement with those who want to lead don't back them up. Because Negroes scared to confront one another. So that's why you in the position you in today, getting slaughtered, getting abused, getting manipulated, don't have no position, no nothing. Because you let little things like this slide instead of challenging it.
Well,
I guarantee you there's more people who don't believe in homosexuality than there is that do, but they're not going to say anything. So the majority has the rule to dictate the terms of what's going on. But nobody want to address that because blacks shouldn't treat one another that way because, oh, the white man, he's going to take advantage.
Well,
that's a bunch of BS.
Well, what? Give me something else that you want to talk about, because if you was on, you was on hold
really
when I brought this up, so
I
you
really
couldn't. Well, wait a minute, wait a minute. You was on hold when I brought this up, so you couldn't have wanted to talk about that, because I brought I brought it up while you was on hold.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When I heard it, that's why I had to reply to
okay,
it
go
because
ahead.
You
right.
know it's one of those things that I'm totally for. I don't have no issue with it. But what I really wanted, because I came in maybe a little late. I really wanted to know, did y'all speak about this whole abortion issue?
No, we hadn't mentioned that.
Oh, but brother, that's what we need to be dealing with and addressing. Because this issue right there is going to harm a whole lot of people, man. See, what people don't realize is this is the calling card on so many levels. And some of the levels is the power of white women, black women being used and then cast aside, and white domination of how we move forward in this society culturally. And it seems to me that this is going to be one of the issues that's going to really, really determine womanhood in this country. Now, I don't know if black women are going to have a voice in this. Because believe me, these white women going to raise hell. Don't you think for a minute these white women, once they start organizing, and depending on what type of help they can get through the media and other factions, because I know the court is not going to help them because there are too many men on the court that's going to side with this nonsense. I think the only thing that's going to save them is that they want to take this to the Supreme Court, and if it go to the Supreme Court, they're not going to get the verdict that they're looking for, which basically is to eliminate Roe versus Wade. You know what I mean? But in the process, you're going to see a lot of talk, and this is what we got to watch out for, of women coming together in so-called coalition. Now, you know, and I know the history of these so-called women coming together, how black women always want to side with these devils, and in the process feel that they're going to be treated with honor and respect, and in the end get a foot in their ass. So I don't know if there's going to be any women that's going to stand up and say, watch out for this. You know what I mean? Because, you know, in the sickness of a lot of these sisters, they think that they're on some sort of equal plane with white women, which you and I both know ain't the case. But it's just going to be real interesting. And think about it this way. Look at how a couple of months ago they had this so-called Women March, and the friction between the group that was Tamika Mowry and some other white girl who had issues with them.
Mm-hmm.
You saw how that played out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now with an issue like this, is that going to be the thing for them to join forces together again? to go after this whole agenda in regards to this abortion and set aside your boy Louis's so-called anti-Semitism or anything like that. Now, I see it as something to where those same factions are going to come together, and when it's all said and done and the narrative is played out over a period of time, the Lisa Sassar, the Tamika Marys, and the other so-called liberals are going to be cast aside, and the other fraction of white women are going to be able to articulate how this move forward. That's why you had the little twisted freak Alyssa Milano come out with this nonsense about men shouldn't get no sex. Come on. Come on. See, it starts with little things like that, and then it feeds. So whereby you have a great portion of us who don't deal in the so-called social media thing, which the big thing is Twitter, in regards to bringing forward hashtags and things of that nature. You know what I mean? Now, I never thought that Twitter was as, how could I say it, as successful and gravitating as to me it seems it has become. Otis could talk better about that because that's Otis' thing. I mean, I follow Otis. I watch Otis think Otis do a good job. I follow Scotty. I watch what Scotty do. Scotty on there all the time. Scotty do a good job. But I've been looking at a couple of these little posts that are being made. They putting together, it seems to me, some sort of coalition or some sort of group to attack what's going on. And I'm just saying, black folks better be real careful how they play this game. Because in the long run, I ain't trying to see my sisters get used by white girls for their agenda. And in the process, you get screwed over like you have for years. So we better keep close attention to this because it's a serious issue. Because imagine, now let's think about this. Imagine if Roe versus Wade was turned in this country and there was no more legal abortion in this country. Who would suffer the most from that?
You want my opinion? Now, my opinion is not My opinion is not backed up by any documented facts. But let me say this: who it would affect the most would be white women. And the reason I say that is everything that Europeans try to use to harm black folks, the laws of the universe always make sure that the scales get flipped. Now, this Planned Parenthood was first instituted by racist whites, and they targeted it at black people. They wanted to keep their birth rate down. They wanted to control women having babies and be able to get rid of babies, give them the option to get rid of their babies. That was geared towards black women, not white women at all. But over the years and over the decades, the script has been flipped. White folks' birth rate is down. White women have been utilizing that abortion thing to no end. And black women, by and large, go ahead and have their children. If you don't believe me, go look in these neighborhoods. Wait a minute. White women want to be professionals. They don't want children to impede their moving up the ladders. They don't want a family. They're waiting. Some of them waiting all the time and then don't have children. Maybe end up having one or two children. They're having sex. But what happens to those babies? They've been having abortions. It's white women that has been utilizing that. And they don't want that taken away from them. This script has been flipped. They can't come out and say, well, I mean, if you do any research on it, you see what Planned Parenthood was started for. They can't come out and say, well, this has never been targeted for you. I want you to stop using it. They can't say that. they'll have egg on their face. So they got to try to control it because they want white women to have their babies. They don't want them aborting babies. But white women say, you ain't going to take that right away from me. I want to be able to get rid of my babies. I only want 2.5 kids or whatever, some old weird number that they use for white women. They don't want that right taken away. Richard, what do you think?
I agree. That's the perspective I've been viewing this on, is that white men who control power recognize that the population growth, and they're having a debate on immigration, this question of population growth, and the debate in relationship to abortion ties to the question about population growth, white population growth, and the fear of being a minority, numerically a minority in this country. I mean, the one thing the media has been beating that down. Here to the federal law. Now they're doing the roll around, and this is a global thing, as it's, but looking at this country specifically, you know, they're constantly saying by 2050, you know, what they see is the browning of America. So this is the only way, and you see where this is taking place, right? Isn't it taking place in the southern and the western states?
Yeah, that's where it's starting.
Right. You know, so when you look at that, but I tie the fear of this, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Elliot, that, you know, it is in that context, definitely in that context, that it isn't. It's a tool to organize white women and a particular group of white women. I mean, the middle and upper middle, quote unquote, class or income white women, they're the ones that have to be better have a galvanizing, because, you know, they have been participating in the political process since Roe v. Wade, and they really have been losing to black people, right? I mean, they wanted Hillary, right? They lost, right? I mean, they lost twice to black people.
Yeah, but that's a percentage of white womanhood.
But the thing was that they wanted to get black women to be in alignment with them, which is the point that I hear you're saying.
Oh yeah, no question. I think that the 56% or 53% that they said voted for Trump, I believe half of them are going to join forces with this movement, because most of them are degenerates who are abused by their husband or no one had kids with them bastards. So this is going to be a real strange coalition. It all boils down to everything in this country. Is how does the narrative be presented, and how they can manipulate all of the forces involved? Because it really should be no argument. I mean, now think about it. I think it was Pat Roberts who said they're going too far. Now think about this. If Pat Roberts saying that you going too far, then come on, you going too far.
And that's only, I'm reacting. That's only because, in spite of rape and the other one, see, because we know that when we talk about white male aggressiveness to white women, you know, that they have been raping white women and getting away with it. So they went too far in trying. I mean, the group of white men who are, because my concern is not necessarily about the Roe v. Wade and this whole thing of abortion. My concern is what's coming up around Article 5, that they want to open up the Constitution, and they have 25 states in alignment to open up the Constitution, because that supersedes the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and but they ain't even start articulating that yet.
They have. I mean, they got 25 seats. Yes, they have.
Yeah,
they only need 30.
You haven't heard too much talk about that yet.
Because black people should be the ones that are seriously concerned if they do open up the Constitution. to address.
Yeah, but what I'm saying to you is black people, that ain't even on black people radar because person that's talking about it other than yourself. That the Negro love.
I'm not dealing with whether they are. I'm just expressing that the whole thing of the issue about abortion ties into the political movement, whether we're talking about it or not, or those are talking about it or not. And that's my opinion. You know, it ties in that movement because it helps organize white women. And then, you know, and it helps deal with the question of identifying those states who are ultra conservative at this point, recognizing that they want to grow white population in the face of the browning of America. So I'm saying the abortion issue going to the Supreme Court is a organizing tool. Because as you say, those white women, I mean, if it's only 50, that means 40-something% agree with those white women, white men. Because the person in, was that Alabama, the governor that signed that law, wasn't she a white woman?
Yeah, she's a white woman.
All right.
She white woman, and all of the men, and from my understanding, all of the men who signed the legislation were white men.
Mm-hmm.
But like I was saying to you, when you talk about this whole Constitution opening up and doing whatever they wish to do, black folks ain't going to be on that radar until what you call them Perm Daddy and Messy Jesse start talking about it. You can talk about it and people will think you crazy. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. Call up a radio show and drop that on them and see what they say to you.
Hey guys, this Scotty, can I chime in on that? That's something that we covered on New Abolitionist Radio over a year ago, and we haven't talked about it recently. But what Richard is talking about is a constitutional convention where they can change the constitution, and the Koch brothers and a lot of right wingers are behind that. And all they need, they're very close to getting what they need. And one of the things I said is, we gonna wait to the last minute. How come ain't none of these black elected officials, you know, getting in on this so we can remove, you know, the exception clause that allows for prison slavery removed from the Constitution? There's some other things in the Constitution. There's some things we can have. We ain't even in the room. And so what will happen? It'll end up where they'll be in a closed door session, changing the Constitution, and we as black people outside.
We're getting a little feedback. I think it's coming from your end, Jay.
Let me ask you this, Scotty.
Jay, we're getting feedback from your end.
You did a year ago, you did a program on that. Now, I watch you on Twitter, and you do a good work on Twitter. Why ain't you pushing that in the same manner that you push the prison reform, abolition 13 thing that you do? Because now, if you think about it, this may be more important than what you're pushing now if you put it into context. Because imagine,
I don't think anything's more important than ending slavery, but it is very important. But it just, to be honest with you, it just escaped my mind. And we did more than one program on it. We did a series of programs on it. And I had to give a credit to Max Parkes because he did most of the studying and he brought it to my attention. You know, he's no longer on New Abolitionist Radio, but he's still out there putting in work. But, you know, I do need to start back. You are right. I do need to start back bringing it to people's attention that I have to hear.
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I know a little bit about it, but I don't know that much about it. But I tell you this much, I'll look into it more, especially when I hear you say that the Koch brothers are backing it. You know what I'm saying?
Backing the whole, the Koch brothers and Mercer, they are backing the anti-abortion position. And the not only the Koch brothers and Mercers, but that now it escapes me, this the legal arm that is going through the states, Alex, that are going through the states to push this ultra conservative agenda. So yeah,
but Richard, the whole thing with this abortion thing is a manipulation and a fight that white women gonna handle. I don't even think men need to get involved in this, because white women gonna turn it out. They gonna really turn it out. Well, it's gonna be like Vietnam. Just wait for this to get on and pop it. Now the thing is, the Constitution, that to me is more scary than this abortion thing, because the ramifications of the Constitution with these psychopaths that's in office, oh man, we could really be into some, you know, deep waters. It's like Scotty said, there's no black sitting at the table. That really could be dangerous.
I mean, even all of this, when you talk about the, because today I didn't hear whether they passed, but the bill that had pushed, it was a bill that pushed through the Congress, or at least, yeah, got approved through the Congress in relationship to, modifying the civil rights bill to include, gay and lesbian marriages. I forget what it's actually called now, but I'm saying all of these things, not dealing with the issues of what is being pushed and what white organizations are doing, somewhat to the core that you make, but it's the question of our particular standing and how are we standing legally, but more importantly, organizationally, in relationship to our own center. And are we standing? And we can't be standing if we're not organized. And we're not now, some are organized, which you're saying, you know, in those coalitions, some blacks are, the black church, the black politicians, they are, even by their silence, they're standing with white lead around abortion, around a gay and lesbian marriage, around, you know, a lot of these issues that are being brought to the table, because they are silent. So they're standing around inequality, even to the prison industrial complex. And you know, they're standing with that. But if you're centered, if you're truly, as Elliot say, black-centered, African-centered, if you're truly centered, which we know is a small population amongst the African community, I don't get confused. I'm not clear, but I'm not confused that we are not as well organized to deal with this. And we see all these things and what it means in relationship to culture, and what it means in relationship to our standing, or to black people standing in relationship to the Constitution, in relationship to our economic position, because this white dominated society is going through a transition. And the question of, we know that's why we support reparations, that's why we support a nation within a nation, that's why we support coming, we support those things as issues. Even as Elliot said, protecting ourselves from police violence, we support that because that's the issue that supports our presence and existence, not just from slavery, but from being eliminated, because they can maintain those other black folks that you talk about. They can maintain them because they're accommodating. The question has always been, the threat is not them, it's been us. For those who are truly African-centered, being about black power, being about having a centered African culture, the threat to white domination has been us, locally and globally.
Hey, Jay, thank you for your contribution, man.
Hey, brothers, listen, as always, it's good to talk to y'all, and y'all take care of yourself. Put me on hold, Elliot.
Peace. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
What's up, comrades? What's up?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Look, you covered so much. I want to touch first on that college thing. I'm not in bed with Jay on that. Number one, the first question I had is, if you got these administrators that are responsible for security of that college, how come they aren't working on having their own police forces to cordon these people off so they can't disrupt the graduation like they do in most of these cities now? They kettle people off into an area. You got to stay there, and people can still go on with their ceremony without you being there to harass them. I want to know what those colleges are doing proactive to make sure that these students don't have their graduation mired by a bunch of racists. And so that's the first question that came to my mind when I read the article.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess I'll just throw the other one out here. As far as this constitutional convention, I put some stuff in your chat so you can probably copy and paste it before you leave, because we did cover that with our new abolitionists, like Scotty was saying. And most of my research shows that what these people are trying to do is reinforce states' rights. They're not really concerned with doing anything to give the public more power. What they're actually trying to do, and it's stated, I pulled a clip out of the article so you could read it. They're concerned with balancing the power between states and the federal government, a return to basically what we went through in the early phases of civil rights, states' rights.
If I may say, not just the phase of civil rights, because even that state right issue goes to the basis of the Civil War, isn't it?
Well, what I'm saying is the most pertinent thing to us contemporarily is that phase. But you're right. Yeah, it goes all the way back. I don't dispute that. And then the third thing I wanted to throw out here is I think you're wrong about the abortion thing, because the truth is the people who can afford the multiple forms of contraception, the highest users of this morning after pill, and there's two different versions of that, and it's also called a thing called the abortion pill, are white women. Mm-hmm. So they already get their abortions through their regular visits to their doctors or over the counter from any pharmacy. That's one of the few things that black women don't seem to be the largest buyers of. I was looking for an article on that because we did some research on that about a year and a half ago too. So I don't really think that that's going to, the white men are going to get what they want by trying to stop abortion just in Alabama. Most of the research has shown that law was written in Alabama to try to get a decision from the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. That's why it's so draconian, so they say.
I'll get some feedback from y'all before I make another comment.
I'm going to mute myself and see if you join in later.
Can I raise a question around that? Because what you say I agree with, it makes sense in the sense of upper middle class, upper income white women and wealthy white women will be able to get those contraceptives. But lower middle class and poor white women are really in the same footing. And isn't it that the numerical number of whiteness, isn't it always been around lower middle class, lower income and poor whites? And the concern about population is about, because when they dealt with population before, they were able to bring in European immigrants to create a broader number of whites. Now, European immigrants are not coming in at the numbers they are. They're coming from the southern hemisphere. So their concern about increase, and right now, poor white women are using abortion.
I disagree with you, Richard. That's what I'm saying to you. Actually, what you found out, I was trying to find the articles and I couldn't find them. These poor white women, even throughout Ohio, West Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, they didn't do the lower, quote, black belt of it. But these people are still getting medical treatment through some of these clinics. So even the poor ones have more control over birth than the average black person. As a matter of fact, if you look at some of the statistics back when that Baltimore guy that they had. I can't call him. He was like a murderer. Most of his victims were black women. And prior to legalized abortion, the highest percentage of abortions were, as Elliot was talking about, black females. And part of that reason, as you already know, is when we went from an agrarian society where having a lot of children made sense when you were farming and that kind of stuff, it became a hindrance as you moved to what? Dual income, women working outside, women getting freedom. So that changed that whole dynamic. And then most of the abortion deaths were from black and Hispanic women. But my point to you is, even if you look at it with the percentages of white people, poor white women, they still have better access to that type of medical than the average black person because of the cost of the over-the-cost. I mean, it's not cheap according to some of the statistics and stuff I looked at over the last year and a half or so. So, in other words, you got to have a fairly decent income to be able to rely on that 5, 6, 7 times a year.
So if they remove Roe v. Wade and they remove abortion subsidy support by the federal law, that if I follow your thinking, then that would mean that poor white women wouldn't have, though they are utilizing the medical, they have more access to the medical system for abortions. They won't have the access because it wouldn't be legal for them to be able to engage.
Well, that's what I'm saying to you. I think what they're going to end up doing is driving up the cost of these morning after pills. There's two different versions of that, and there's also an abortion pill. So what these white men think they're going to accomplish is actually going to be defeated by the pharmaceutical companies because they're going to get their cash. So in other words, I think white women are still going to be able to control how many children they have because of the income disparity. They just have better access. And just like I was talking about, even through Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky, these rural areas, they get access grants and stuff, and they're giving these people this stuff they're not paying out of pocket for. You know, you even some of these high school programs, these kids can go to these clinics, and you can't have an abortion, but the morning after pill is acceptable. So they're going to be able to control theirs. I don't think they're going to get the outcome they're going to get. But really what they're doing is trying to just overthrow Roe v. Wade to try to get to forcing the birth rate up. And I don't think it's going to work.
Wow.
But I wanted the thing about the black colleges. That bothers me the most because if the other thing y'all were bringing up when you talk about police killings, a lot of these towns that are breaking away all through the South that are, what do you call it, cessation. They're breaking away from the school boards. They're breaking away from some of the county governments and creating their own municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
They're also going to private policing. So they're creating their own police forces and don't really care about using, quote, public police. So that's going to make public policing even harder on black people, I think.
Yeah, but that...
And the other thing I say, I'm going to shut up. I really been upset over those three cases, and Elliot brought it up today because I've been talking on some back channels with some people saying, I don't understand where the Zerlina Maxwells and 4 or 5 of these black women that they've been pulling out on MSNBC and CNBC about sisterhood and unity and people of color. I haven't seen a single one of them tweet about the deaths of those black women. None of them. Yeah. And that lady was shot down like a dog. That man unloaded 5 bullets in her after she said she was pregnant and was trying to get her for basically what's supposed to be a medical condition. And by the own local rules, he wasn't even supposed to engage her that way. They actually have rules set up in his police department about calling in someone to help de-escalate it. And he shot that woman down like a dog. 5 shots like he was being attacked by a rabid dog or something. I don't understand where Nina Turner is, where The Arab lady that's talking about Palestine. I don't understand where Black Lives Matter is.
And wait a minute, brothers. Where is Sheila Jackson Lee? She's from that state.
Part of what's wrong with this country. I don't understand why women aren't upset. Even the women in my real life, when I bring it up to them, I've actually had women at every level. I'm talking $7 an hour Molly maids, and some of them that are retired and living good and touring Europe 3 or 4 trips around the world a year, say she should have complied. They're basically saying she killed herself. Comply or die is okay with them. I don't understand it.
Wow.
Brother Otis, thank you for your contribution.
Hey, peace.
All right. Richard, you know, I'm going to reach out to Brother Derek Muhammad. You know, he's been on with us several times. In fact, last time Derek was on, I think, boy, it's been that while, been that long. I think we were talking about the flood that happened down there in Houston. Remember when he was on?
Right.
But I see that, you know, he's been talking with the family, dealing with some of the young people in that community down there. I think Baytown is a suburb of Houston. I see that he's been kind of active on what's going on down there. So I'm going to reach out to Brother Derek and see maybe Sunday he can give us a little update or see what's going on, talk with him.
Great.
And bring it to the Time for Awakening audience. Let's take a brief break because I'm come back and then we'll wind things down, Richard. Got a few more minutes left in the program, so if somebody want to squeeze a call in, you can do it. What is it, 1012? The line's open, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832.
It's an article. Article. You know, maybe in the last minutes. You know, when you come back from break, or if you know,
you want like to good. You want to mention?
Yeah,
we'll do that. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a 7-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in 3 states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
Not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put them anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back. It's time for an awakening, and it's 10:24 in the city of Philadelphia. Let's go back. Richard? Yeah, Richard?
Allie, you know, when you started the program, you asked, you raised a question for a, you know, a solution.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And the basis for Time for Awakening is to, you know, as you open, always say, to look at the historical and cultural position of black people, African people. And I was looking at this article written by Adore Walker in Black Perspective, which comes out of the African American Intellectual History Society. and she was dealing with the book Kamala's War did, A Nation Within a Nation. So, you know, for me, you know, you kept hearing me say it's about being organized, but, you know, not for prosperity. You know, as a prosperity, a movement, you know, for money's sake, but for power. And that we have a history of that, you know, organizing for power and power being defined as I defined it now, you know, bringing together Dr. Fox's definition and Dr. Wade Noble's definition of the power to define reality and stick to that definition in spite of the consequences, but also to have others respond to that definition as if it was their own. And that's, to me, what when we talk about dealing and cultivating power, organize what we're organizing power for. So when in that book, Nation Within a Nation, you know, I just wanted to, if you don't mind, read out some excerpts and, you know, just to reemphasize the solution. Mm-hmm. And this here particular article, The Modern Black Convention Movement and Black Youth Leadership. And it made me think of the brother we interviewed from, was that UCLA? That was a part of the Black Student Union?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but she says, you know, taking parts of it, she says, A Nation Within a Nation made three critical contributions to our understanding of Black youth political and activism, most of which was scholars have only sparsely engaged. First, it revealed the importance of the Modern Black Convention Movement, MBCM, in the development of Black leadership among high school and local youth. And to me, that's something that we have to be. I hear Brother Otis make that reference all the time of getting to youth. And we have to, and you make that reference all the time of how important it is their youth. Well, in the 60s, they had that modern black convention movement, which was specifically to develop Black leadership. And I'm saying Black leadership around Black power, right? The question is today, are we, you know, when we talk about solutions, are we developing Black leadership for Black power compared to, you know, whether it be for church prosperity or for Black political entrepreneurs, but compared, you know, for Black power. And it goes on to say, in development of Black leadership among high school equity, as well as ways in which young people contribute to the movement itself. For example, Witter examined the political work of Black youth organizations, the New Ark Student Federation, the CFUN youth move members. Second, it provides a roadmap for writing intellectual histories of Black youth politics that address over time. And we need to be clear when we're looking at Black, how has that, we see what liberation and freedom is, but what do you Black people, young Black people today, what does that mean to them? Because they become leadership in the future and as it relates to the Black power. It introduces scholars to the importance of studying the impact of Black power. She goes on to say, Witter suggested that the movement aided Black leadership development in several fundamental ways. It created a forum for ideological revolt. It was a political training ground for leadership, offering workshops and preliminary sessions where young people were exposed to new political perspectives. It nurtured in many local leaders a new identity and national movement, and it created the political atmosphere for the development of Black United Front. Now, you know, we also, Ali, you engage us to look at the political party formations that are occurring, you know, all over. Now, isn't that, and they are doing some of those things, right, as far as having those kind of forums, having those, the training for leadership, exposing them to political perspective. So these things are need support. They need to be cultivated and grown. This is what was done in the 60s out of the Black Power movement. This is what it seems as we're in 2019 when we are asked trying to raise the question of solution, that we should be making sure that we're on target and supporting those efforts, like what's being done on Time for Awakening. And she goes on to say, in no uncertain terms, what are out Black youth took in their struggle for self-determination and against structural inequality. In doing so, he produced one of the first studies to take seriously the intellectual social contour of Black youth and contribute. Well, shouldn't we be identifying those Black youth who are doing that? We had another sister on here in Time for Awakening that was came from one of the high schools, out of the Black Student Union. I think that was Northeast High School.
Yeah.
And we, you know, impress again. Well, we those youth who are in those structures aren't the solution that we identify them and support their growth and development by being engaging, not necessarily directing or telling, but assisting in that. And that support, isn't that providing a solution as they develop their understanding of what it is to have power and be utilized that politically, socially, and culturally, and economically? That seems to be a part of the solution that we should be going in. And then the last 2 points that we make that out of this article was that the struggle for power in electoral politics and public housing exemplified the impact and limitations of the modern Black convention movement. And it seems that what she brought out is the whole thing about and going on in this article. Although the modern Black convention movement revealed limitations of the United Front, and that was approach to movement building, it remains a useful framework for making sense of the role of Black power conferences in the leadership development of Black youth and artists and scholars. When you ask us, you know, for a solution, you know, that we need to anchor in, I think that, as you know, Dr. Clark says, we should look at our history for the solutions. But we can't look at our history if we're not studying our history.
Okay.
We can't look at our history if we're not centered in our own history. Not what others are doing, but what we have done, and evaluating what is the strengths and weaknesses, you know, that we need to fortify as looking at it from now. That's what I want to offer.
Listen, I agree with what you're saying, and the assessment of the writer. We can't do it without pulling the young people in. They have opinions, and especially if we kind of teach them levels of critical thinking, they have opinions and solutions to a lot of these problems. I remember Malcolm said in one of the speeches that we played that he was looking to the young people because he said, what did he say, Richard? They didn't come up with any solutions, and they've been wrestling with these things for years. Mm-hmm. So he said that they need the young people to come up with the solutions to a lot of these problems. And especially if we center our young people in their history and culture, they're going to come up with the solutions to these problems. We got to involve them, though. And we got to immerse right. them in their own experiences in history and culture, because you can see that the opposition is trying to immerse them in every negative thing that they can find.
Right.
And, you know, they have the television and mass media to assist in those efforts. So it's a fight. It's a task. Sometimes it seems like a monumental task, but it's not a battle that we can't win.
And they're out there. I mean, as you've been showing, like, you know, we hear their voices. It's that we have to find them, and we have to, you know, assist them, because they're looking for assistance.
Yeah.
You know, they ain't looking to be told, but they're looking for assistance.
Yeah, like the one sister that was head of the Black Student Union at Northeast. She was looking for somebody or some organization to join with. and was asking us some of our suggestions or input to who she could latch on to. So, like you said, they're out there and want assistance. The young activist brother from UCLA. Well, he got his parents to tap into because he said that they're the ones that kind of molded him to what he's doing there at the university. Mm-hmm. So he can always bounce things off of them. But, yeah, just like you said, they're looking for guidance. And, you know, they'll be able to make solid decisions, especially, you know, as moving on and getting more experiences. They'll be able to make solid decisions based on the things they've been taught and their experiences.
And we have to be the ones that protect them, not just watch them grow and develop, because we know that the intelligence and the, you know, we talked about that sister that received unjustly and, you know, inhumanely those five bullets. Well, we know, you know, Malcolm's birthday is coming up. Malcolm was only 30-something years old. Martin's only 30-something years old.
Yeah,
we can go down the line about it.
If I'm not mistaken, both was 39.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, and that's at that point. They were 12 years, you know, these are teens, you know, and went through two different transitions just when you actually, you know, look at it. And at the strength and advocacy and the clarity of what it is they were representing and who they were representing. You know, they seen what was coming at them. Fred Hampton, they seen what was coming after them. But we, you know, we have to be the one. When I say we, I'm saying what Cynthia McKinney said, those who standing on the sidelines. We have to be the one to take the bullet. When they show these movies about the Secret Service and the president, right? You know, they I mean, this is in the movies, because it never really happened. You know, they never really happened in real life, right? Nobody takes the bullet for the president, right? I'm thinking of Reagan, right? Ain't nobody take the bullet, you know. But in the movies, they got the person that's going jump in line. We have to be the one to protect them, because we know that they're a threat. I mean, this has been the history to say Black leadership, whether you call it the Messiah or whatever, has been the threat of Black the American state. And, you know, we have to be prepared to take the bullet for them, to jump in front so that they can be able to continue their work. Identify them and protect them. That's what the point I'm making.
Yeah, I agree. That's why when we were talking with Brother Jay, and I was telling him that and drawing the analogy of a son that he may or may not have. I don't know whether he has any children, but you know, you can't allow, especially groups like that, to come down there and be protesting at the school. An HBCU talking about what Black children should or shouldn't be doing. We already know what our children should or shouldn't be doing, but I don't want to allow those people to be telling, dictating to my family and to my people what our children should or shouldn't be doing. So I mean, that's the point I was trying to raise, but there's no problem. You know, it is what it is. Listen, I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Interesting discussion, Rich, and it's going to be more interesting discussion on Sunday also. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be
the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
To save the children.